Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting
people. And the Media Project is back on the air for another week, and we hope to enlighten you with coverage and analysis and perhaps some expertise on the hot topics in the world of media. I'm Ira Fussfeld, the retired publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York, sitting in for Rex Smith, who is on assignment, as they say. I'm not quite sure that's accurate, but it sounds good when you say he's on assignment. And I'm joined by Alan Shartok, returning champion, who missed our program last week. Alan, the head honcho here at WAMC. Good day, sir.
Good day to you, Ira.
Thank you. And we're so pleased to have, for the first time, and welcoming to the Media Project, Kaylin Brown, who is the chair of the journalism department at the College of St. Rose here in Albany. She has been a real journalist. That doesn't suggest that professors are not real journalists, but she's been a reporter with the Times Union here in Albany and in Syracuse and in Troy, and it's a great pleasure to welcome you.
Thank you, Ira. It's great to be here.
And I told Kaylin there's only two requirements. One is to make like you know what you're talking about, even if you don't. And second is no matter what Alan says, we go opposite.
Okay,
is that there. We're all there?
Yeah.
And yes.
Well, it's a very nice day out there.
No. It's raining. It's pouring. And I must confess to being a little bit intimidated because we have Dr. Shartok and we have Dr. Brown.
And don't forget it, Ira.
I won't. So I'm going to be, for the purposes of this program, be known as Dr. Pepper.
All right, Dr. Pepper.
Funny, that's a joke.
Okay, that's a joke. Yeah, okay. I thought I'd start with this, and that is a survey by the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy, which is a fairly well-known and I think respectable company that says that most of the coverage of Donald Trump by the elite media has been negative. In fact, it says it's setting a new standard for unfavorable press coverage of a president. All of the big ones are mentioned, and all of the big ones are overwhelmingly negative in the survey's view. And even Fox News, which is the least negative, is more than 50% negative. Wow. And I guess the question is this survey a surprise? Is it helpful to know this? Or, in my view, is the fact that the coverage is negative because the subject is negative and the news stories that are emanating out of the White House negative?
What do you think, Professor?
So, Professor, I would say that we have to wonder what is negative, because if it's the truth, is that really negative coverage? To me, the media has been delivering facts about what's happening with this presidency, and as a result of delivering those facts, some people construe those as negative, but I do not characterize the coverage as necessarily negative.
Well, while I want to agree with you, I do want to say that one of the things that has been duked out on this program a lot between Rex and me, Ira and me, is that I think there is an incredible amount of bleed from the editorial policy of a newspaper into the factual, so-called factual reporting. Rex takes great umbrage at that and thinks that there is a, you know, separation between church and state and that this doesn't happen. But I've always argued, hey, when the Times hires somebody, they're hiring a Timesman. They know what they're hiring. And if you just do the right kind of relationship understanding of what they're saying in their editorials and what they're saying in the news columns. Only one, and that was a friend of his, Adelson, in the country, endorsed Trump. So they're not coming into this loving the guy to begin with, right?
Well, the report says that although journalists are accused of having a liberal bias, their real bias is a preference for the negative. So that the suggestion being, the suggestion is that for all of the negative things that the three of us could easily come up with about Trump, that there have been some positive things in his administration, yet the media is not leaning to report on those because the negative is what's more interesting to them.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Ira. I've been listening to NPR. I love their guy, Michael Reskus, who runs the news department. You know, our old friends, you probably remember him, Kaylin, from back in the Capitol, back in the day. Great guy. However, I think they are bending so far backwards to show that they are not compromised and that they're being fair, that they're being unfair because they're giving Trump more positive coverage than he frankly deserves, running right in the face of what you said before, Kaylin.
Yeah, what is negative and what is positive? So I think that the media, some characterize some of the media as elite or mainstream, but if we look across the spectrum of the information out there, and what the White House is delivering, what we're seeing is oppression of people and othering people and not giving voice to the voiceless. And that's our job in the media. The job is to give voice to the voiceless.
If we accept the survey at its face value that the coverage has been overwhelmingly negative and perhaps unfairly so, is it fair to say, well, what do you expect? Reporters are human beings, too. And look at the way Trump has treated reporters throughout this campaign. And look at how he has stirred up the pot and had thuggish mentality at his rallies. And in fact, leading up to this event that happened last night as we speak, where a candidate for Congress in Montana literally physically accosted a reporter who's asking a question.
Darn, Ira, I agree with you.
Oh, man.
And that's a position I don't like to find myself in. But I think you're right. When he yelled at one of the things, you know, okay, just take him out. No, you know, whatever he said about the guy. Or when he calls the press the enemy of the people. Ibsen, the enemy of the people. That is really something. You know, a lot of research has been done about reporters. And yeah, you know, reporters don't have all that much money and all the rest. So generally, you know, the results are you find them a little left of center, at least a little left of center. But the publishers, and we all know that the editorial pages belong to the publishers, the so-called publisher's page, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And, you know, everybody else gets a vote, but the publisher has one more than everybody else. But the publishers don't like him either. They think all the things you just said, thug, pre-fascist, everything else is what this guy is.
So is it possible that, I know reporters would deny it, and maybe it's some conscious if it's true, but is it possible that a lot of the negative coverage that they're giving of Trump is a reaction to a visceral negative reaction they have to the guy based on how he's treated them?
Well, the Shorenstein report talks about the combative nature of the reporters, which would bleed out into that Montana instance mm-hmm. last night. But reporters have a responsibility to not be combative. Our job is not to go in there and pick a fight. The job is to get the information and to do it in a way that is productive and efficient.
You know, that's a thin line, because I have had reporters in my face who I think have been behaving in an unethical or a very pushy fashion. And I'd like to, you know, give them a headbutt, too, as this guy did. But you just can't.
But in a civil society, which we like to think we used to be, if not are now, you can't do that. I mean, whether it's a reporter or whether it's a guy you're having a discussion with at the grocery store, but the tenor in this country now has reached a fever pitch, the divide of points of view, and then it's spurred on, particularly on the right, by the Alex Joneses and the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys, that there is this bubbling anger in our society, which then ultimately, as was the case with this guy in Montana, leads to violence.
When you're 9 years old and you punch somebody, when you're 3 years old and you punch somebody, say, oh, he's a kid, he's working it out, he's going through it. But we don't allow that in adult society.
Which is why all the newspapers in Montana have pulled their endorsements of that candidate, and that candidate is expected to be charged, if not has been charged.
Yes, he was charged with a misdemeanor or something.
With a misdemeanor. Some people think it should have been a felony, but the sheriff who arrested him has made the point, you know, that while he gave him $250 for his campaign, it has nothing to do with it. My question is whether or not this helps him or hurts him. There's an assumption it's going to hurt him by everybody. But we know that newspapers aren't popular in the United States. We know that they're really low. Somebody says, it's about time somebody called
I think
tap
there's
going to
be
guys.
That. I think that's going to, and it's fueled in part by this guy's own statement. I mean, the evening of this event, rather than essentially saying, you know, I lost my cool, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it, there's no place for that, he put out a whole convoluted statement about the aggressiveness of this reporter, which witnesses said did not occur. And then, tell me if I'm overreacting, he wanted to make the point about liberal journalists. And I think the only word that was missing from this guy in Montana was liberal Jewish journalist, because the guy's name was Ben Jacobs. You know, so his instinct was not to be conciliatory, and I'm sorry, his instinct was to try to rationalize what he
No,
did.
But you know, Ira, you have a really good point there. Again, I hate to say it.
Let's start
because
over.
If he had start over. But if he had just said that, then he would have had all those people who said, yeah, he cold cocked him. That was good.
Yeah.
But also, he showed a little apology here, which makes him a gentleman. So I'm thinking, you're right. I think you have a point. He would have had the benefit of both sides,
yeah.
And he just made a little apology.
And the ultimate irony is that the reporter and staff that
from Fox
was
News.
From Fox News that underscored the accuracy of the reporter's story. So,
well, and we're going to talk about Sean
Hannity. We are going to do that. And before I get into him specifically, last week on the program, Roger Ailes' death actually broke while we were in the studio. So Judy, Patrick, and Rex Smith and I had a little bit of a chance to talk about it. But now with the benefit of a week from that occurrence, the two of you have comments on Roger Ailes and the impact that he made, not just on Fox News, but on journalism in this country.
I think that he brought out some really good journalism, and Columbia Journalism Review in the past week has had a story interviewing Emily Steele from the New York Times, who sought out the one woman who would go on the record with her name talking about her experience with Ailes. And the reporting that Steele did, she reviewed O'Reilly recordings over and over again to see what guests were there and then vaporized. And she found the one guest who had vaporized, I believe it was Walsh, and talked to this woman and got her on the record. So to
I'm
me...
I'm sorry, I mean, you're having a definitional problem with vaporize.
Yeah, sorry. So she had been on the program repeatedly and then no longer was on the program. Thank
oh,
you.
I see.
Yes,
so she was vaporized.
Being a little
but
hyperbolic
just because
there.
She wouldn't,
yeah.
If she wouldn't do the dirty. Is that the idea?
Exactly,
yes.
Right. He offered her a job and then invited her to a hotel room.
Yeah.
This is a
yeah.
Method of operation for him. And then after that happened.
I know
this
shouldn't count, but he was so ugly. So how could, I mean.
You're talking about Roger Ailes.
It was pure power.
Well, you know, Roger Ailes is credited with inventing this news network, and I put the word news in quotes, that provided a point of view for conservatives, which was seen to have been underserved in this country. So let's start with that. Is that a fair and admirable assessment of what he did? And then part two is, he did that, but then look what happened as a result. It grew like Topsy, and it grew out of control.
Well, no, it was number one. Look, we all know that Fox, out of the three major cable news networks, was number one. Mm-hmm. It ain't anymore.
It's not anymore.
And English teachers, please don't write me about using the word ain't. It's just for emphasis. So it isn't anymore. And that's because the Murdoch boys, who have other things to do in the world, including DirecTV or whatever it's called in England, and they want all of that, and they don't want to be counted out, they're changing the tenor of Fox, and they are losing viewers.
But it's not just that. It's a series of events that start with the sexual harassment has pervaded that network, and then you have O'Reilly, and then you have Bob Beckel, who was fired recently from The Five, who is their token.
Five is one of their programs.
One of their programs, and he was fired for harassing a black man. And so the culture at Fox News has been horrible. The lineup has changed, which could speak to the ratings decline. But there is also a point of view that MSNBC and CNN have risen past Fox because of Trump. And that the people who are willing to gravitate to Fox to read the conservative point of view are not getting what they want because it's hard to get what they want given what's going on with
but
Trump.
Fox isn't giving them what they want. In other words, in the old days, if it was a conservative position, Fox would have been the big defender. As you point out, Fox was the one who blew the whistle.
So you think they're not the big defender anymore?
I don't.
According to the Shorenstein report, the record shows that Fox was reporting 52% negative Trump and 48% positive. So that seems like a shift in the content.
I think you're right.
Yeah. But they, you know, again, just pure ratings. They had 8 o'clock O'Reilly, 9 o'clock Megyn Kelly, who's no longer with the network, 10 o'clock Hannity. Only one of those three is still there.
And he doesn't like what's going on, Hannity.
Well, Hannity, goes to this other story, and you talk about what's going on when we hear fake news. It's typically coming from the Republicans claiming, and from Trump, claiming that the liberal or mainstream media is providing fake news. But here we have this story that Fox and Fox alone, and particularly Hannity, have been drumbeating on, and that is the case of Seth Rich, who was a member of the Democratic National Committee, and he was murdered and under mysterious circumstances, although the police believe it was a burglary. However, the conspiracy theorists, Hannity chief among them, are saying that Rich was the guy responsible for providing material on the Clinton campaign to WikiLeaks, and the Clinton campaign did him in, literally and figuratively.
Well, it's ridiculous. It's a stupid thing. However, a lot of people believe it, and that's the problem when you start with this conspiracy stuff. It's akin to Vince Foster and some of the other things that have happened over the years. But Ira, in all honesty, Hannity is the last man standing there, apparently. apparently, between the Murdoch Du Bois and the old way of doing things and the new way of doing things. And he's angry in hell, and he's yelling and screaming that the fox has been decapitated and whatever other words you want to use. And the only question for many of us, because I find him one of the most loathsome human beings in the world, is when are they going to off him?
And could you clarify off?
No, fire his behind.
Oh, that's as far as you want to go. Well, and then adding to this is that after significant pressure, including from Seth Rich's family, Fox News offered an apology. Most believe it was a rather tepid apology, but nonetheless, they apologized for the coverage, said that their coverage had not met their journalistic standards. However, Hannity, although he backed off of it slightly, saying that he was doing it in respect for the Rich family, has not apologized and still believes there's something to see here and is going to continue to investigate.
I'm sorry, Caitlin, go ahead.
The singular source for that Rich story has withdrawn. So,
no, there's nothing there.
Right.
It's baloney.
Right. So why are they continuing to pursue this is a question.
It's what we call false news.
Yes.
False news.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Media Project, and I'm Ira Fussfeld with Alan Shartok and Caitlin Brown, and you were going to say.
I was going to register for a comment, Ira. You talk so much that I don't really get a chance to
see this. Caitlin, it's often been said that when people listen to this station, they don't hear enough of Alan.
Yeah. So the question is, what happened to Fox? I mean, what happened to Fox? Because, you know, Hannity said, okay, I'm going to shut up on this now. I'm not going to say anymore. And when they said, well, you're doing that because the Murdochs told you to shut up now. And he said, no, I'm just doing it cause... It has nothing to do with them. And that seems awfully strange to me. I don't want to go so far as to call him a liar because that would mean, you know, lawsuit. So I don't want to say that.
Well, the other thing to watch long term, and I'm talking really long term, unless Trump suffers a quick trip out of the White House, it's my recollection that when George W. Bush was in the White House, particularly in the first years of his terms, that Fox did not do as well as did the other cable channels. And it was because the other cable channels were then drawing in the liberals who wanted to see George W. Bush be beaten up every night. Keith Olbermann, you recall, was on MSNBC drumbeating anti-Bush. And now their ratings, Fox's ratings, turned around during the Obama years. And now here we see them going the other
way. That's a very good point.
Okay, let's, in the remaining minutes, we talked a little bit about Gianforte, the Montana candidate. Did we explore that fully? Or I think we've already agreed that beating up on reporters is no good.
Well, you say it. Yes. Caitlin says it. You both reporters. I'm saying there's a good deal of this country who wants to see reporters beaten up a little bit.
So I also would mention on this that The Guardian, for whom that reporter works, has taken advantage of this opportunity to do some crowdfunding on its website. And their current website says, support The Guardian's fearless journalism by making a contribution or becoming a member. What you're seeing now, and we've seen this for a while since this new presidency, is that more and more, especially print journalism outlets online, are touting their strength as a source of truth and enlightenment, and this is a chance to support that endeavor. So at the New York Times,
exactly.
The Washington Post, and now The Guardian in Montana has a reporter who's gotten beaten up, or body slammed was the word used in the story I read, and as a result, they are going to put forth that we are a hardworking newspaper and our reporter is willing to suffer, and you should spend money on us.
And, you know, which is sort of the public radio model. Give us money, even though we're a corporation that makes money, and the New York Times has never not made money. Is that right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But even the New York Times, as it is,
I'm saying. I read the Times overnight every night, and then you come down to this thing and send us some money, help us support our journalism. So that's the sort of NPR public radio model.
And at a time when the New York Times is, as are other big papers like the Washington Post, adding hundreds of thousands of subscribers, they are still, the New York Times is laying people off and bringing down the size of their newsroom because they need to, one, and because under the digital age, you don't need quite as many people as you used to have. Which leads me to the question I wanted to ask Caitlin and Alan, who still hangs out in academia. I was talking to David Gustina, our producer, before the program.
Also an academic.
And he does some teaching at the University of Albany. And I was talking about, in light of what's going on now, are we in a new Watergate age for budding journalists? Are you seeing that the journalists in your programs are more excited about being journalists than perhaps they they were a few years ago when the only stories about journalism were about layoffs?
So I would say yes. And in my advanced journalism class, which just concluded this semester, it was a document-based class. We do a lot of freedom of information work anyway in each of my journalism classes. But I would say that this group of students probably delivered the best work I've gotten out of students, and I've been teaching journalism since 93.
That was yesterday.
Yeah, so
70.
We're forever fighting to get access to public records, though, and we have long records actually at Albany City Hall with denials, and we are working closely with Bob Freeman and some other
people. Bob Freeman, for those people who are out there who may not know this very famous guy, is the guy who is in charge of making sure journalists can get public access.
He is really one of the heroes of Albany.
Beloved.
Yeah, he really is, and he's been doing it forever. He works all hours. If you're a reporter in the smallest newspaper town in the state, you make a phone call to Bob at 8 o'clock at night, and you'll get him on the phone, and he'll clarify an issue for you.
Which does not mean if you've been denied access, you're going to get it right away.
Yeah. But that's interesting. When I was a budding reporter at the Record, Freeman was the first person I called when I was kicked out of a Scaticoke school board meeting. Yeah. He has been visiting my classes for 24 years. Yeah. He comes every semester.
He always came to all of mine. He's been great.
Yeah, he goes around.
We had him when I was publishing the weekly newspapers in Dutchess County. We had him because it was mostly young reporters, and we had him down there to talk to our group, too.
And he's a super resource, not just for reporters who we're talking about now, but all citizens need to know that they have access to FOI and that they should use it, and they can use the open meetings.
FOI meaning Freedom of Information.
Thank you, Alan. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
The problem, of course, is New York State is not the most easy state to get information, and that's why we need dogged reporters and editors who are not afraid to go out there and do this, but somebody like Bob Freeman who can interpret the laws for us. The Prime Minister of England, Theresa May, says she is going to confront Donald Trump over the stream of leaks and crucial intelligence about the Manchester bomb attack. British officials were infuriated when the New York Times published forensic photographs of sophisticated bomb parts that UK authorities fear could complicate the expanding investigation into the blast, etc.
Well, let's remember here, Ira, that the British have always done it differently in terms of reporting on crime as it's unfolding. It's always been fascinating to me. They don't give you a lot of particulars because they think it's going to harm the defense, and it's not fair. Where we leak everything here.
I wonder about the leaking, though. I do not think all information should be leaked. So while I'm not advocating for censorship, I do not think that necessarily every reporter that has all the information needs to deliver all that information immediately. And there have been constant examples throughout history of instances when withholding, perhaps for a little bit of time, might be valuable. The Unabomber for a local person comes to mind when there was a stall on the manifesto before it was eventually published.
On the other hand, the Pentagon Papers might never have made it.
Exactly right.
Well, I thought it was interesting that unless Theresa May has specific information to back her up, that the presumption is that somebody in the Trump administration leaked these pictures to the New York Times, which says to me two things. One, the pervasiveness of leaks coming out of that administration is such that people are presuming that it was them. And secondly, it didn't have to be them. I mean, the New York Times and other media no doubt have been working their own sources to get these pictures and other information about this case. So I think it's interesting that Theresa May has automatically concluded that it's the Trump administration.
The Times has promoted extensively that they have multiple reporters in London now. The second this happened in Manchester, they were very quick on their homepage to repeatedly promote the fact that they had multiple humans over there covering the story.
Somebody will say, of course, that that's their cover because they're taking the information, but they need to cover the sources.
Sidebar to this is and it comes up often, but on cable news in the days after this bomb blast, loop after loop after loop of the result of the bomb blast and to many ways of thinking, period interest. There was no reason to show these pictures over and over and over because all it was the suffering of these people.
Well, yes, there's a big fight about that. I've talked about that before, but the fact is, if you don't want to see it, I don't want to see them, and I won't look at those pictures. Mm-hmm. But in a democracy, if you want to have people making intelligent choices, they have to be given the information, and they have to see what the carnage is.
That's Kovac and Rosenstiel. It says that in order to make informed decisions, the reporters have to give information. That's how the citizenry decides.
Well, I don't know about Kovac and Rosenstiel, but I know I've been saying it for a long time.
Absolutely.
We're out of time. I'm sorry. I was going to say Alan had the last word, but then Kaylin had the last word, then Alan had the last word. Doesn't matter. good program. I hope you'll all agree. Thank you very much for listening to The Media Project. For Alan Shartok and Kalen Brown, this is Ira Fussfeld, and we'll talk to you next week.